KYW News Radio and Deborah Heart and Lung Center team up to discuss arrhythmia, diagnosis, treatment, and management. Here's Rasa Kay.
Cardiac electrophysiologist Dr. Rafael Corbizero says you might want to get frequent heart palpitations checked out, but don't freak out right away.
Everybody has skipped beats, whether it's the top or the bottom part of the heart. No one is regular 24/7. What they mean prognostically depends on the patient. A young, healthy patient with a normal heart has some skipped beats, premature ventricular contractions that they feel, significance, very little. Bothersome, we may try to help them out. A different patient that has had open heart surgery, has had heart attacks, their scar, those skip beats may carry a very different significance. They might be at risk for worse problems, and we have to evaluate that.
Learn more at DeborahHealthReport.com.
New Jersey's only heart, lung, and vascular specialty hospital, Deborah Heart and Lung Center. When it's your heart, demand Deborah.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby.
If you enjoy football, hootball,
be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys. New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday.
Subscribe on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Kale and Company, weekday mornings, 6 till 10.
I do want to round back to some of the stuff with the debate coming up in about 10 minutes. And it's actually going to tie into some quotes from one of Biden's most trusted inner circle members, one of the three 60-year-old white males. So we'll get to that, because this guy, he doesn't like the message and the main bullet points that Biden is trying to push here, as they are running the same playbook back 4 years later. But I got to tell you, one of the best things about the move that I just had with my family was being complete, and it wasn't a vacation by any stretch, but it's what I try to do when I'm on vacation, is disconnect from my phone, not be on social media. And you can check my timeline. I went 5 days without a single tweet, a post, a reply, a like, a retweet, anything.
Wow.
Did you do it, Nick? I'm so impressed.
It was the gum. The patch doesn't work, so I went to the gum, and the gum works.
A whole 5 days.
But between you telling me to get off and my wife saying she's going to break my fingers if I'm on it too much, I'm at the point where I am kind of bored by it. So you probably won't see much of me on social media this summer other than retweeting some show stuff. Jot this down. Mark the tape, boys. Mark this in the back.
One down, two more to go.
Two more years or two more months?
No, two more people.
You got like a hit list, huh? Well, we can't really control Bruno. He's coming up tomorrow at 8:30, and he'll be tweeting incessantly as well.
Yeah, no, I can't do that.
But I didn't even check my phone. Like, I had text messages, voicemails, notifications, emails. I checked my phone two or three times. Honest to God, I probably spent 20 minutes each day on my phone, total screen time. 20 minutes. When normally it's 5 to 6 hours a day in screen time, based on those recaps you get if you have an iPhone. If you're an Android user, I don't know what recap you get because you're a commie. But I want to play you this Woody Harrelson clip, because I think this is great, and I think more Americans, myself included, should adhere to this. It's so good for you. It's such a refresher, a recharge, a mental health boost. Like, it's beautiful. I get it. It's hot as you know what out. But it's beautiful out. Put down the device and go do something. This was Woody Harrelson on the Ted Danson, Where Everybody Knows Your Name podcast, because, well, everybody has a podcast. Ted Danson and Woody Harrelson talking about how Woody Harrelson has a serious disdain for the cell phone. Listen and watch this clip.
Okay, let me explain something about Woody. He doesn't have a phone. He's one of those bullies in life that make other people carry his phone for him.
Well, now that's not exactly true.
Hey, we need to know something immediately. Call Woody. And I just kind of laugh at whoever says that to me.
Well, so, I just don't like to have, you know, to be readily available to any human being at any time. You
know? It doesn't feel good.
No. And plus, but that's not the reason. I like to be in touch with people in a way, but I don't like the appendage on my appendage.
Yeah.
You know, like where, like, you know, I made a thing where I'm like, okay, I'm going to set a 2-hour limit on my phone, because this is, I've given it up now, three and a half years. But back then I was like, okay, I'm going to set this limit. 2 hours. It's like 9:30. Meh. You know, I've already hit my limit at like 9:30. So I woke up and I've been on it 2 hours already.
Yeah.
Because you know how it can just keep going and going. There's no
Is this like
it.
Phone calls or?
No. I never used it as a phone ever.
just for texting or apps or...
Yeah, texting and not... Well, I don't know about apps, but texting and also, emails, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. So I just finally, I wanted to be able to be in a... Like if I were out to dinner with you, right? And there's just a lull in the conversation. Oh, I'm on
yeah.
the phone. Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. You know, and I look yep. back down to the device.
Amen.
It is so spot on.
As he's, saying that on a device that you can only get on your phone.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? I mean, the hypocrisy of this is that listen to us talk about not having a phone on a device that you need to have your phone for.
Correct.
Or an app you need to have your phone for.
Well, I tell you what, has he done a lot of drugs and alcohol? Because he sounds like his brain has just gone into slow motion.
Woody Harrelson is my spirit animal. I love Woody.
He's awesome.
I love Woody.
Yeah, that thing he did on SNL with the vaccine was great. But the point being, and I noticed this when I was, you know, down in Tennessee, my mother-in-law came down to help and coordinate and yell at me and tell me where to put things because I'm the worst at that stuff. So, you know, we went to dinner each night and my girls, they want to bring the iPad. They want to bring the phone. I'm like, no, your grandmother's down here. I'm down here. Your closest friend. We went out with a couple of their friends from dance and, you know, my wife's friends. I'm like, this is the last 3 or 4 days you're going to see these people, short of of us taking a once a year trip for a vacation, you know, for a couple of days to go to Nashville, you don't need to be on your phone. And just because there's a downtime and a little slow down moment in the conversation when you're in a group, that's not an excuse to just pull out your phone because you're so socially awkward that you don't know how to kill 20 seconds before you drum up the next conversation point. But just think about, you heard Woody there. At 9:30 in the morning on a weekday, he's hit his 2 hour allotment of time on the phone. And if you think about workplace productivity, people that get on TikTok, like our girl months ago said, oh my God, I get out of work at 5:30 and when I get home, I don't have time for the gym or my friends or my dinner. If you just look at the amount of screen time you waste in a day on your phone, imagine what you could actually get done productivity wise in your life. Like you should, and granted, I'm on my phone way too much, but I'm always caught up on what I need to have done. Somehow I manage to do that. But I'm not one of these people that says, I don't have the time to get to this today. Well, you spent 4 hours and 37 minutes on your Apple iPhone. In that 4 hour and 37 minutes, you could have done your grocery shopping or you could have got the new gas tank for the grill or whatever that you claimed you didn't have the time to do. I just don't think that I don't have time. For 99% of us, it's not a viable excuse.
What he is describing there is an addiction. I mean, think about how you wean yourself off cigarettes or alcohol or something. You was like, well, I drank X amount, so now I'm drinking Y amount to try and cut back so I don't have to go cold turkey. That's what he's describing is an addiction.
Coffee,
we all have addictions to our phones. I was just literally walking down the hall trying to get a cup of coffee. A young woman walked right by me. Didn't want to make eye contact, something like that.
Head down.
Looked down at her phone.
Yep.
I'm just like, what is so, and I'm not calling her out, but you know what I mean? Like this is, we can't go 5 seconds without looking at our phone.
It's because, and let's be honest, your phone is your phone, your phone's your computer. But as Woody Harrelson said, I mean, the last thing you really do on your phone for the most part is actually make phone calls.
Yeah.
You text, you post, you take pictures. It's everything but talking. And when that becomes your main modality of communication,
good job.
Like texting, your talking becomes awkward. Like for me, it hasn't because I talk for a living and all of us do. But there are many people that you can tell that have become so accustomed to text messaging and every other way of communication that when you sit down with them across the table at a conference room, they can't look at you.
Yep.
They don't know what to do.
Yep.
Now, some people are just naturally socially awkward, uncomfortable in those settings at birth or through school or whatever. But I do think the phone has warped us in many, many ways. And by the way, the only person that has the right to say they don't have time in a day is Dawn Stensland. Between 6 hours of radio, the groceries, all the lawn care, mowing grass, cutting down trees. Dawn, you're the only one that can use that excuse on this show.
And qualifiers for the Junior Olympics. I was out on the field until like 8:30 last night.
How'd that go?
Great.
By the way, I was over in your neck of the woods yesterday.
Chestnut Hill?
In that area. Yeah. Yeah, I was dropping off my U-Haul truck.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I had to return it over your way. Yeah.
Where did you went to Roxboro. Did you go to Roxy?
No, I was Springfield Township.
Oh, okay.
You're close to that, right?
Kind of. Yeah, that's on the Montgomery County side.
Okay.
Timbo writes, this live radio plus YouTube is my favorite version of podcasts / live. It's great. Yeah. Well, thank you. We appreciate that. But all I'm saying is that this is when we look back now, pictures of the 60s, 70s and early 80s, and we see literally everybody smoking. And yeah. we say how dumb that looks. It's like, oh, can you imagine everybody back then? So, like, that's the same reaction hopefully we'll have in 20 years from now when there's photos of everybody in a large group just looking down at their phone.
Mm-hmm.
Like how dumb, how stupid did we look?
Oh, yeah.
When we're out in the company of other people and yeah. we can't make eye contact because we had to check our phone 19 times.
I'll give you a prime example, and it's not to call out anybody specifically here, but it was collectively for the industry. 2 months ago, we go to Harrisburg for the PA Radio Awards.
Yep.
I mean, there had to be, what, 150, 200 people in that conference room mm-hmm. for lunch and the awards? And there was certainly some people, you know, commingling, having conversations. And then there's just a bunch of other people that are just in between eating the free rolls with butter. You know, they're just sitting there scrolling, swiping, and I'm just like... Like these are like your industry peers, you know. I don't care what you do with your career, but try to make a connection.
Yeah.
I mean, I had a conversation with my old PD from 2006 that walked up
you
to
did.
Us.
You did.
And the last thing I want to do is be staring at my phone in that setting.
It's just too, and it's ruining the communal experiences mm-hmm. that we have. Like we don't have experiences anymore. I heard I'm watching that documentary that Andrew McCarthy did on the Brat Pack from the 80s.
Oh,
and
that was good.
He interviewed Malcolm Gladwell. And they were talking about the impact of those John Hughes movies in the 80s and how everybody has seen The Breakfast Club, 16 Candles, all of those movies because they were communal experiences. Everybody, if they didn't see the movie, they knew what it was about. They knew like it was this communal thing that you invested your time in. You went and you bought tickets, you stood in line, you mm-hmm. went to the movies, you went to the movies with other people, you talked about it afterwards. It was this communal, like we don't have those communal experiences anymore. Everybody is so siloed off into their own thing that nobody does anything collectively anymore. So
right.
You go to these concerts, you go to sporting events. Nobody's watching the concert or watching the game.
No, they're
watching it through their phone.
And they're taking a picture of
yes.
the experience and posting it. Hey, I'm at this event. Look at this.
Or
right?
video of it. So
yes.
you're not actually taking in the experience. You're not having communal experiences.
No.
You're just trying to put the communal experience on your phone to show other people, mm-hmm. which is ridiculous.
Yeah, and this is why the Masters Golf Tournament every April in Augusta, Georgia is great. They ban cell phones on the grounds. They don't want you videoing and posting. They want you to be off of your device and just, you know, soak in the experience.
And look, I'm guilty of it too. My job is, you know, I have to constantly be, you know, aware of what's happening on this radio station with you guys, you know, for the show the next day. Like we're constantly communicating about this stuff, which I'm glad with. We set up this system to work like that. But, you know, sometimes you just have to step back from it and just, okay, enough. Like you know, if the show sucks tomorrow, it sucks tomorrow. There's nothing I can do about it. Or if, you know, we didn't get this guest or we didn't do this. It's just, it's not, like, life goes on. You know what I mean? So,
mm-hmm. uh-oh. We've never had a bad show on the show, by the way.
By the way, guys, another good month.
Exactly right.
This is the Kale and Company podcast from Talk Radio 1210 WPHD and on the free Odyssey app.
Last story of the day, and it kind of goes back full circle to debate week, Donald Trump, Joe Biden, CNN coming up Thursday night in Atlanta, Georgia. You'll get the simulcast right here on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD. But earlier in the show, we played you that clip of Joe Biden and his inner circle, his three most trusted advisors of the Biden brain trust. And coincidentally enough, they are all 60-year-old plus white men. But, you know, the Biden administration on the exterior around the edges, you know, they like all their checkbox DEI hires, right? So this story is interesting because we've talked about strategies, right? And the Biden campaign, what they are trying to push on America and running the same playbook back like they did in 2020, minus the new addition of abortion and female reproductive rights, which obviously happened 2 years ago. So that was after the election. But Axios with a headline, quote, in Mike, I trust Biden's faith-based campaign. Senior Democrats, including some of President Biden's aides, are increasingly dubious about his theory for victory in November, which relies on voter concerns about January 6th, political violence, democracy, and Donald Trump's character. Again, if I was advising the Biden campaign, I would just ram home abortion, female, 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 every single day. I don't know that January 6th resonates. Yes, to the fringe Trump haters out there, yes. But I think most people move on and they get past certain things like that. Democracy's at stake. Well, if you look at it, it's the Biden campaign that's really been pushing the limits and challenging the concept of democracy. And Donald Trump's character, we've seen it. 4 indictments, 91 charges, he goes up in the polls. So you, I don't think you can really expect to win if you're running on the character or lack thereof of your opponent. And now this comes after reports saying that Barack Obama is worried that Trump may well win. According to New York Magazine, what Obama is whispering to Biden, as Gabrielle DiBenedetti reports for the New York Magazine, a story about Joe Biden and Barack Obama's plan to save their legacy from Trump in 2024, as Obama has been quoted as saying he is, quote, worried that Donald Trump may well win. Which is kind of interesting, because I think for the most part, over the last couple of weeks, and I think we've had this conversation at least once, we've been, you know, wondering the question and talking out loud of, why are the Democrats so confident? What do they know that we don't know, right? And Kamala Harris has given this strong, steady, kind of even-keeled message of, oh, we're going to win. Believe me, trust me, we are going to win. They haven't shown a lot of panic. You've seen and heard advisors and strategists that have panicked. You've seen and heard talking heads on television panic. You've heard Hillary Clinton and AOC and Rachel Maddow. Yeah. My show is going to be canceled. I'm going to be thrown in jail. James Carville, nothing is sticking. He's having meltdowns. But the people that are actually a part of the administration that have a platform almost on a daily basis have come off very confident and very even keeled. Yet here you have another one of his strategists. Mike Donilon is one of the three that we showed you in that image on YouTube, who said now that the Biden campaign is out of touch. This is a quote directly to Axios. It is unclear to many of us watching from the outside whether the president and his core team realize how dire the situation is right now and whether they even have a plan to fix it. That is scary. Axios continues by saying people close to the president told Axios they worry about raising concerns in meetings because Biden's group of longtime loyal aides can exile the dissenters. So it seems to me from afar, from reading this, that this is one of those things where you have Joe's little inner circle, his trusted henchmen, so to speak, where if anybody brings up a valid concern, they're kind of jettisoned. So is this Joe being stubborn? Is this a few people in Joe's inner circle thinking, hey, we did it once, we can do it again? Why is there this divide of, hey, strategy-wise, it's not working? Which I think those dissenters that are being exiled, if this story is true, they're the ones that are actually getting it right. Now, look, if Biden, and I'm not sitting here saying what he should do to, because I want to see him win, but what I would say to them is I would ditch the January 6th stuff, the democracy stuff, the Trump character stuff. And I think that's a lot of that's going to come up on Thursday night, regardless of the question. And I do believe CNN will have these questions, and they'll be revisiting the past. January 6th, certifying elections, voting integrity, a 2020 election, because they can't let go of the past. But if you're asked about, you know, the economy, if you're Joe Biden, if you're asked, and a lot of these guys get asked these questions about a specific topic, and they never really answer the question on said topic. They just go to their memorized talking points. If I'm advising them, I would say to avoid those three issues and stop bringing those up, because I don't think that's going to work. What you should be selling, same thing if you're Trump. You know, yes, revenge, success is my best revenge. I don't have time for revenge. I've got a lot to undo in 4 years. That's all great. But make it about the present and the future. I don't know that it really benefits either person to go through the past, although I would say I think Trump has more of a right to do so for the way these last 9 years have gone, because he's been hacked at every single step of the way. Biden can't talk about past successes of the last 3 years because most Americans aren't feeling those, quote, small successes. Donald Trump's first 3 years, he could talk about those successes. But I think it's more about, I think we're so tired of the past. Dawn, you talk about this. We're all exhausted from COVID. We're exhausted from the election stuff. There's a reason why those polls show that America has fatigue of both guys. Show the everyday man and woman what you're going to do in 25, 26, 27, and 28. That, to me, is a winning approach to Thursday night and future debates moving forward.
Yeah, and I think for Trump, I hope he does not talk about the past, except for his record, but to talk about the future, to talk about the importance moving forward of figuring out ways to, number one, secure the border. And I think that we should be talking about the opioid crisis more than we are. It's just there are so many areas that are in a disaster right now that we're not talking about the opioid crisis enough.
Mm-hmm.
But taking more than 100,000 lives a year, it's shocking. And so when you think about the border, that's part of it. The lawlessness. Look at what we're dealing with right now in Philadelphia, New York, Chicago. Look at all of the crime that we're seeing, and much of it blamed on an uptick in gangs and more violent gangs,
right,
who are fueled by the gangs coming here from other parts of the world,
mm-hmm,
in South America and beyond.
Yep. Asia, the Middle East.
Yes.
Those ISIS terrorists. Now, going
human
back,
trafficking.
Yeah. Like, again, re-drudging up the past. COVID, 2020, the 2020 election, January 6th. I don't think that benefits Trump. But I would say this, and it's more of a question. Do you think it's valid for him to bring up his indictments that he's been dealing with and his arrests and his conviction? Because I think there's part of it where it is valid, but we've also seen in the polls and in some of these other surveys out there that most Americans don't care about this weaponization stuff that's going on. They didn't care about the Stormy Daniels stuff. So is it advantageous for Trump to even bring that up, or should he avoid that unless somebody else brings it up?
Well, they'll probably bring it up, or Biden will say something. And so he has to have some quick answers. And he should say that, you know, what if he says, because he wants to throw Joe Biden. So what if he says, yeah, Joe, I think that the courts were weaponized against your son, who's also a convicted felon. And when elected, I'll commute the sentence of your son. That'll throw Joe Biden if he says, unlike you, you have vowed to not pardon your own son.
Mm-hmm.
I'll pardon your son for you. Mm-hmm. It sounds like he's got a bad addiction problem.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not his fault. His dad is crooked Joe Biden or something. You know, whatever he says like that.
Yep. All right.
It's Kale and Company on demand from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the free Odyssey app.
What's on the cut sheet?
I do. Dawn reported in her Big 3 at 8:30 that the Surgeon General has declared gun violence a public health crisis.
Yes.
Vivek Murthy was on CNN this morning, Surgeon General, discussing this new... Is this a declaration?
Sounds that way, doesn't it?
What do we call this?
Declaration, yeah. Yes. Warning.
We bequeath that gun violence is an epidemic.
Yes.
It's a public health crisis. Cut 13, Phil. Go.
Jeez. And you say we can take action. In and of itself, what does this advisory change?
So it changes a few things. Number one, when the Office of the Surgeon General declares an issue to be a public health issue, not only does that put it squarely in the realm of public health, but it also elevates it on the priority scale. This is what we saw happen half a century ago with tobacco. When the first Surgeon General report was issued on that subject, it catalyzed a series of actions in communities, in schools, in lawmaking bodies all around the country that ultimately helped us reduce smoking rates from 42% in 1964 to less than 12% today. So it prioritizes the issue. But the other two things this advisory does is it lays out the impact of this issue, particularly on our kids. Many people may not be aware that this is now the leading leading cause of death among kids and teens. As a parent, I strongly feel that that should increase the prioritization of this issue as well. But finally, the strategies I lay out show us that there are, in fact, solutions. Many people I talked to around the country worry that this may be an intractable problem, that there's no way to solve it. That is not true. Thankfully, we have a series of steps we can take as a country to address it. And my hope is that this advisory will help increase the urgency of us doing so.
So my first question or questions would be, if this is really an epidemic, I want to know what areas and what regions of the country this is a bigger issue. Is this happening in red states as much as blue states? Is this happening in the country, in the suburbs and townships as much as the inner city? And who are these individuals that are either dealing with the mental health or dealing with the crisis or the ones that are inflicting the violence on society and innocent people? Because my whole stance has been mentally sane, responsible gun owners, for the most part, short of when they blow a fuse or whatever, and you know, you can sit there and chop that up all day to Sunday. Most of the time, it is usually those that don't have a license to the gun, that maybe just came across the gun. These are guns on the underground market. These are drug dealers, criminals, gang members.
Guns purchased illegally.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
We're going to continue to blame the gun.
Right.
It's the inanimate object. It's the gun's fault. And we're not going to talk about, to your point, where this is happening and who is pulling the trigger.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think who's pulling the trigger, that really, we need to focus on that.
Correct.
You know what I want to get to the bottom of that is actually a public health crisis in this country? Obesity. And I think that we need to get to the bottom of the crap they're pumping into foods.
Yes.
And I think we need to get a handle on the crap that parents are giving their kids. I think that is the greatest public health crisis of our time.
Yep.
And for whatever reason, the Surgeon General, all of them, they don't want to address that.
Yeah, why don't we ban energy drinks if there are like turbo cancer causing ingredients in these bangs and these other C4 drinks that are out there? Mm-hmm. Like you start reading all these stories of these deadly, I mean, by the way, there's a graphic out there. You can see the amount of sugar. And not just a number, but like they fill up bottles based on the size of each drink, these energy drinks.
Yeah.
If you saw the actual amount of sugar that is poured into like the 8-ounce Red Bull, you would be like, I probably don't want to drink that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If we want to go and do statistics about the as they say, mass shootings that are happening these days compared to what they were 30 years ago, fine. Let's also go with the obesity rate and the diabetes rate from now till 30 years ago.
It's funny you say this. I was having this conversation with my wife's uncle as we wrapped up moving, and I brought the truck back up to Pennsylvania, and he was, he's the guy, I tell you, he's part Bernie Sanders, part Alex Jones. He was saying, you just got to stay on the perimeter of the grocery store. Go around the perimeter.
Yeah,
Produce, vegetables, meat, fish, dairy, everything on the inside of the grocery store and the inner aisles, all bad for you.
I mean, he didn't. That saying's been around for a while.
No, I know, but like, you process cereals.
100%.
How do these cereals last for 2 years?
100%.
Because they're filled with crap.
I think that is the biggest epidemic that nobody wants to talk about, because we don't want to hurt people's feelings and we don't want to do this. And there's lobbies that are involved
business.
In this. You know, we all talk about, the left loves to talk about the NRA and their stranglehold on the Republicans. What about, these big food lobbies and these, corn and all that stuff lobbies that have their, their vice grips around the,
yep.
of
By the way, I'm going to go home and get me some Hawk 2 in about 15 minutes.
Yeah, baby. Yeah. Instead of removing the homeless camps.
By yourself?
Hey, Dawn, whatever you got to do to reach your desired end result, all right?
I'm sorry. I just couldn't resist that one. Come on.
Oh, man.
Hold on here.
We want to hit that.
Yeah, we do. All right.
Jump on me. Go for it. That's what we do here.
Instead of removing, she said something yesterday, too, that needed to be clipped. I forget what it was, but.
Good.
Jim's
good. Good.
Instead of removing the homeless camps, LA is clearing items placed by businesses to prevent homeless camps.
Address the root cause.
This report is courtesy of KTLA Channel 5 News out of Los Angeles. This is cut 11. Phil, go.
And just like that, the planters are gone. The city citing businesses need permits, and these planters are an obstruction.
Planters.
The business owners say no more than the tents that used to line Sunset Boulevard for years, encampments encroaching over the entire sidewalk.
This is like bare minimum of where we should be right now. We should never have a thoroughfare blocked with bodies and waste because the city neglects the area. And this is not a war on homelessness.
Andrew Monheim owns Monheim Microphones nearby and says it's unbelievable.
It's totally disrespectful to small businesses and the people that have been the lifeblood around here. And I'm not just talking about myself, but like businesses that thrive around here and they keep the pulse. There's no reason that they should have to stand around and watch like this go to the worst possible scenario.
And it-
so they're removing the planters and all the things that make the street and everything look nice.
Yes.
So they can make more room for homeless people to defecate in the street.
I just want to look at it from the small business perspective. Like that guy right there. You know, do you think if he set up at 5th and Johnson on the corner, his address is 524, and there's three tents, do you think like a patron wants to navigate or in and around these tents with homeless people that are banged up on whatever to go in and spend money at the small business?
Yeah.
No, these small businesses are getting crushed by this.
Yep.
By the way, how's the cleanup in Kensington going? We have any updates on that?
Well, they're continuing it, but you know, Ken, that was the site of the officer shot, right? Saturday night.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
All right.
It shows you that it's still a very dangerous place, even if you are an armed law enforcement officer.
Yep. All right, Dawn Show is coming up in about 11 minutes, and we find out what she has lined up top of the hour.
Yeah, we're getting new details on the suspect, new details and an update on our officer as he fights for his life as well. Dave McCormick, Senate candidate, Republican, will be along, stopping by in the 11 a.m. hour. So much going on. We'll have dogs. We'll have a dog trainer and specialist from Jersey. She's going to come on. Oh, my goodness. There's so much developing. Trump news as well. Some new polls out and the latest on Trump, Biden, inside stuff coming right up.
All right. Looking forward to it. Dawn Show at the top of the hour, June 25th. Let's get to Today in Music History.
What happened on this day in music history? Music history. On Kale & Company.
Today, June 25th, we celebrate the birthdays of Carly Simon, who's now 81. Tim Finn from Split End, who's now 72. And heavenly birthday shout-outs for Alan Lanier of Blue Oyster Cult and Ian McDonald from King Crimson. We also lost Michael Jackson on this day in 2009. Singles include 25 or 624 by Chicago in 1970, Lonesome Loser by the Little River Band in 79, and Won't Get Fooled Again by, of course, The Who in 1971. Albums include Purple Rain by Prince in 84. Alice Cooper Goes to Hell in 76, and Gary Wright's The Dreamweaver in 75. Also, Stone Temple Pilots was atop the U.S. album chart in 94. In 77, Marvin Gaye was atop the single chart. In 2009, a souvenir poster from all four Beatles sold at auction in New York for $52,500. In 88, Debbie Gibson became the youngest female artist to write, produce, and record a number one hit with Foolish Beat. In 2023, Elton John played his final UK concert at Glastonbury. But lastly, a major developing breaking news music story from yesterday. The three largest record labels are now suing two AI music companies, alleging mass infringement of copyrighted sound recordings. Yep. This, of course, is a, like I said, a major developing music story. For Kale & Company, I'm Phil Lomquist. This is going to have ramifications far, that are going to be years to come.
I'm sure we'll be talking about those updates. All right, that'll do it for us. Stay tuned. The Dawn Show is up next. Don't forget tonight, Zlock Performing Arts Center, Bucks County Community College, Zioli and Jack Carr. I'll stop on out, say hello. Stay tuned. Dawn is next. We're back tomorrow morning at 6 a.m.
Good night, everybody.
Start your day with Kale & Company, weekday mornings 6 till 10 on Talk Radio 1210, WPHT, and the free Odyssey app.